Charles Woodson, Desmond Howard, Denard Robinson, Timanga Biakabatuka, from Yost to Harbaugh, passed down from generation to generation, Michigan football has stood the test of time. What's that feeling you get when you catch your first glimpse of the big house? When you hear, "And take the field." When you see the team emerge from the tunnel, sprint across the field, and touch that famed M-Go Blue banner. Saturdays in the fall, tailgates with friends and family, favorite players, favorite teams, and unforgettable moments. A lifetime of memories. College football in 2020 may be unique, but it has arrived at the corner of Stadium and Main, which is where you can find Michael Spath and Justin Rowe sharing their analysis, their stories, and their emotions about this year's Wolverine. This is the Stadium and Main podcast, presented by Kapnick Insurance Group, Wolverine State Brewing Company, and Lewis Jewelers.
Welcome to the Stadium and Main podcast. I am Justin Rowe, joined by my co-host, Michael Spath. And it is Wednesday, December 23rd. This will be our last podcast before Christmas and the holiday season. And so things are going a little bit, not really how we planned right before Christmas here for Michigan and the Michigan Athletic Department. Don Brown was dismissed yesterday, which was kind of some shocking news, I guess, on the timing of it. Not shocking news after the season and what's been going down in the past couple seasons. But, Mike, how you doing out there?
I'm doing well, Justin. The first domino, I guess, has fallen on this this Michigan coaching staff. A lot of tea leaf reading yesterday going on, and whether or not this move indicates that Jim Harbaugh will be back as Michigan's football coach. It certainly would seem to indicate that. I don't think that if you're going to get rid of the head coach, you announce an individual firing. And I guess technically Michigan didn't, but this looks like one of those moves that Jim Harbaugh is going to make to try to improve his football team going forward. So certainly some big news and lots to talk about there. And I want to bring in a special guest, Dan Rumoschek, who played for the Wolverines, was part of that famed 1998 recruiting class, arguably the top-ranked class in college football that year that included David Terrell and Marquise Walker, Drew Henson, Justin Fargas, Cato June, Larry Foote, Dave Armstrong, Dan Rumoschek, and many, many more. And he played for the Wolverines from 98 through 2002, started his final 3 years, had a big season with an 8.5 sack season in there. When he texted me yesterday when he heard the news about Don Brown, and I said, "Hey, do you want to come on our podcast here today and talk about it?" So, Dan, welcome to the Stadium and Main podcast.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me today.
So, Dan, let me ask you a question. What were your impressions of Don Brown? I guess if you kind of take us through, like, from the time he got here and then at some point, because I think all of us were 2016, this guy is a mastermind, Dr. Blitz, the whole thing. 2017 still felt good about him. At some point, we started to sour a little bit. And so take me kind of through your progression of the Don Brown career at Michigan.
Sure. So, obviously paying attention to you guys and, reading newspapers and trying to understand what's going on over at my former school there. And, Don Brown got high praise just from the hiring standpoint, because I think when Harbaugh was looking for a new coordinator, because that was a DJ Durkin was that mm-hmm. 1 year before him, and then he left for Maryland. We needed a new D coordinator, and it was kind of like handing over the keys of a Lamborghini, because we had not only the recruits, but you had Harbaugh at the helm. So it was, here you go. And I think he reached out to I think it was Belichick that gave the praise of Don Brown. So it came in with high praise of, like, okay, this guy has an NFL mind. Knows what he's doing. And let's be honest, his schemes for the most part are a lot of NFL type schemes. He does run a a very complex defense. And so it was exciting because we had kids that probably could run it. And you saw the progression of, okay, we're should be becoming this elite program. And then whenever he met some equal talent on the fields, mm-hmm. all of a sudden the scheme went away. And it was really, as the old football saying goes, it's not about the X's and the O's, it's about the Jimmy and the Joes. And the Jimmy and the Joes were on equal footing with our Michigan football team. And unfortunately, then it turns back to the scheme. Is the scheme actually working? And when you saw equal talent out there, you saw the holes that were created. And unfortunately, they were large. And from a former defensive player standpoint, we could see them. And you would want to see where the adjustments are. Okay, how is he going to adjust? Because this is what he's getting killed on. They never happened. And unfortunately, I think that's his ultimate demise.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Dan, it's interesting because, you know, he made a number of comments essentially like, hey, we are a risk defense. We're going to get after you. We're going to get pressure on you. We're going to be able to play man-to-man because we have physical corners, physical yep. safeties, and we're going to, you know, create chaos in the offensive backfield and haunt that that quarterback to some degree. And again, as you said, I mean, that was working. And as long as that pass rush, and you had Maurice Hurst in 2017 teamed up with Vinovich and Rashawn Gary, and you had Devin Bush yep. coming on blitzes, you know, you looked great in 2016. You think about the front four, and you had Chris Wormley and Ryan Glasgow and Taco Charlton. You had Jabril Peppers coming on blitzes. And so guys were getting home, and it looked amazing. But then the problem really surfaced, as you said, what happens when the team has equal talent? And suddenly, you know, we saw it most dramatically in that Ohio State game. But even before that, during the 2018 season, we saw a couple of teams that were able to stave off Michigan's blitz and Michigan's pressure packages. And as soon as they did, all of a sudden it looked like, whoa, hold on a second. This secondary might not be as good as we thought it was.
Right. Right. You know, I think our secondary was that good. But you mm-hmm. cannot keep people on islands all day long. It's not possible. When you're running, you know, four and five wide receiver sets in college now, there's just no way that you can actually keep those guys in man-to-man. And I never agreed with how he ran his scheme on the defensive line. Yes, I see blitzing, but there are plenty of times when you had a Mo Hurst and Rashawn Gary out on the field, they should be getting home in one-on-one pass blocking situations, and they weren't. And it's not against them. I mean, heck, I got blocked one-on-one all the time, but I didn't have their talent. And what I'm saying is I didn't think they put them in positions to succeed. When you look at guys like what happens at Ohio State, I mean, there's no reason, Chris Hutchinson shouldn't be looking like the Bosa brothers. There's no reason in my mind.
Right.
Why are we not setting that kid up to succeed in one-on-one situations? Because I sure as heck wouldn't want to block that kid. I mean, 6'6", 265 pounds coming downhill, that should be a nightmare for any offensive lineman and especially any tight end or running back. And it looks like they're two-gapping him, and I can't figure out why. It's a head-scratcher in every sense of the word.
Explain that a little bit more, Dan, for the layman out there. So, you know, someone like Aiden Hutchinson, Rashawn Gary in the past who – you know, Chris Wormley, all played that strong side position. But I agree with you because one of the things that used to, you know, really kind of upset me was this idea that people used to always just kind of dismiss the lack of pressure that those yeah. guys got as saying, well, they're getting double teamed on every snap. But if you go back and watch the film, they actually weren't. And in most of the third down situations or most of the passing situations, they were in one-on-one, but they weren't getting home. Why weren't they getting home?
Oh, well, and again, this is difference of philosophy. So this is my humble opinion moving forward here. But one, let me back up. The first thing that we always talk about, and this is from my Michigan days, this is when my brief stints with some NFL teams, but it always comes down to stance, alignment, and assignment. And one, they're in this frog-looking stance that I couldn't figure out. I mean, compare Ohio State's defensive line stance to our stance. It's Ohio State's in a track stance. They're coming off the ball as soon as that ball is snapped, and they're trying to get as much penetration as possible. We're in this frog stance, and the first thing we're doing is we're headbutting an offensive lineman. Now, what that tells me is that you're probably in what you call a two gap. So you have to control the offensive lineman and have the ability to shed him either way so that the defense can control both gaps on either side of him. The problem with that is that slows your pass rush down. One, because you're hitting somebody, but two, you're reading. You're not actually attacking. And I speak from experience when I was with the Steelers for a brief stint, because we were running a 3-4 and I had to completely change my stance. I had to change my reads. I had to change how I engage people, because you're supposed to engage an offensive lineman, where when you're in a one gap type defense, Ohio State is, and you see them, they come off the ball, they're penetrating the gaps, and they're trying to create as much havoc as possible. And you see the difference, because when Ohio State rushes, there's only four rushers and they seem to be getting home quite often, where at Michigan, it took a blitz for somebody to get there.
Right.
That's a problem. That ultimately is a problem, because you know this, if the blitz doesn't get home, you're in man-to-man on the back end and somebody's going to get open.
I wanted to ask you, Dan, it seemed like this season specifically, when you saw the Michigan State game and then a lot of games past that, which I know that brings up bad memories, of course, too, but it seemed like they decided, all right, we are going to max protect, make sure that Michigan does not get to our quarterback, and then we'll pick them apart in the secondary. So that seemed like it was a pretty easy adjustment for offenses to make against Michigan's defense. And then Don Brown didn't seem like he had a counter card to that. It just seemed like, all right, we're just going to keep sending guys, even though they're getting picked up one after the other. When the quarterback doesn't get any pressure on them, they really were able to pick that secondary apart. Did you see any, I mean, obviously you saw that, but was there anything that Don Brown could have done to adjust to the max protect? What should he have been doing in those situations?
Absolutely. Well, so you're always calling defense based off of the personnel that's coming into coming in for the offense. So, you know, whether that's one tight end, one back, all wide, and the rest wide receivers, or four wide receivers, one back, you kind of all of a sudden are the offense is telling what the next play is going to be based off of the personnel. But that has to change based off of formation. So whatever defense is called formation and the formation shows up, you better be ready to adjust. Really, I think the biggest thing that they should have been doing in, like, especially trip sets or what we call box sets, you should be checking into a zone. Because the problem is, and this is where Ohio State figured it out really quickly, they would take their number one wide receiver and run him on a shallow cross. Mm-hmm. Well, when you're in man-to-man, you're always in a trail position then. The only way that stops is you have to pass that off. And they would never pass off a route, especially when you're, you know, first and 10 from the 30-yard line with 70 yards to go. It's just not something that you normally do. You normally do that in a goal line set. Now, again, this is philosophy. So, but they would never pass off routes in man-to-man situations. And unfortunately, when you'd see a bunch set, they would just get crushed, because it would be a 3 or 5 yard slant that turns into a 70-yard touchdown because we're in a trail position. Or at the very least, check the blitz. I mean, if you see that you're supposed to be running from the strong side and yet all of a sudden you're in a trips formation to the strong side when you're thinking a tight end should be coming over there, check it off. I mean, or shift. I think where my biggest concern came in wasn't this past year. My biggest tell was when we walked up to Madison a year ago and got crushed. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those Jonathan Taylor runs, I think that was like 70 or 80 yards, that was simply off of a motion call that we rocked our safeties over, and now we had no one to fill the backside D-gap. And I think Taylor went on a simple zone play outside and was gone. And it was because we were not lined up properly. Yeah, that's right there. That is not the kids. That is all coaching.
Yeah. and things like that. You know, I mean, there are mistakes that happen, Dan, you know, I mean, every team, you played on great defenses. You won a lot of football games. You guys were never perfect. You know, that's just the way that it goes. But I think one of the things, and you mentioned the zone and how they didn't adjust very well. I think one of the really frustrating parts was in the 2018 season. I mean, I don't know if Emgo Blog did this or not, but I bet if you counted the amount of times that they played zone in 2018, it was less than like 5% of all defensive snaps. And yeah. So when all of a sudden Ohio State had man beaters, and really the week before Indiana had man beaters too, but Don Brown was like, hey, whatever, that's no big deal. We'll be okay. Instead of learning from it. You know, as soon as Ohio State went to man beaters, with their extremely skilled and fast, you know, wide receivers that could just run the crossing routes, he didn't have a counterpunch. Well, then in 2019, he actually did run a lot more zone, but something that we noticed in 2019 and then in 2020 again this year, Dan, was that they weren't very good at it. And so I wonder, some of the guys would say like, well, we do practice it. But if the message from the top on down is like, he's doing this begrudgingly, he's not really invested in running zone. He's doing it because he's forced to. Doesn't that kind of carry down to the players?
100%. Are you going to buy in if somebody doesn't believe in it, that's selling it to you? No way. There is. If I sat there, you know, even as a defense, you sit there and you watch the offense, and I don't care what anybody says, your attitude can be affected by what the offense is doing. And there are times where, you know, we have Anthony Thomas in the backfield and it's 3rd and 2 and we're trying to throw the ball. Mm-hmm. We're Michigan. What are we doing? Run the damn ball. You know, it's a demoralizing situation at times, especially when you're an emotional kid at 19, 20 years old, and you think you should be forcing your will upon somebody else doing one thing. Well, if he's begrudgingly about zone defenses and not wanting to play this and he's going to play his style, why would you care if you're the one out there when the guy who's calling it doesn't even really believe in it? When I played, it was, you know, I don't mean to sound old here, but when I played back in the day, we believed not only in the game plan, but we believed in the adjustments. It wasn't, you know, hey, this is how we win, period. It wasn't, you know, it didn't have to be pretty. It just had to be effective. And we're going to practice it until it's effective.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, between Harbaugh and Don Brown, the stubbornness has been what has really killed them over the last couple of years, right? And so that has been a tough thing to watch for Michigan fans when myself and Michael and yourself are watching from our couch or the stands, and we're sitting there going like, stop the crossing route. You know, we can see what's going on, and we're not, you know, the most knowledgeable. You are, Dan, I know, but you know, I don't think I know as much as Don Brown, but when I see it's really tough for us to watch that happen. So it seemed, you know, back into the years where you were talking about it, Mike, you know, 2016, 17, 18, I always thought, you know, Michigan would get off to a rough start in the beginning of the game, they'd give up 14 points like right away or something. But then I was always very confident in Don Brown going into the locker room, making those adjustments. And then a lot of times in the second half, they'd either give up 0 points or very few, a lot less than what they gave up in the first half. Well, now in 2020, it seemed like when a team would come out and run a certain scheme or certain whatever against him, he didn't have a plan B to what he was
right
to run at the beginning of the game. Did you see that change from his first 3 years to his last three? And why did it seem like his stubbornness or the lack of the adjustments in plan B really was his Achilles heel in 2019 and 2020?
Well, the second part of that question is I don't know why he wouldn't change, but to each their own. I mean, I can appreciate when you know something works and you don't want to change and you're going to ride that down like the Titanic. I can appreciate that coaching style to a degree. Right. But where my frustration came in was, you're cutting your nose off to spite your face. Make some adjustment, something, anything. I mean, like I said, you can simply in trips formations, you can be calling switches. You know, your defensive backs can be passing wide receivers off based off of the routes that they're running. Like, that is a possibility. And, you know, especially early in his career, when you had the skill set players, you know, the Jabril Preppers, you had those guys. Who's our cornerback that plays for Dallas now?
Jordan Lewis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, you had those guys. I mean, and we used them. You know, they were in man-to-man. They were making plays because those athletes. I think the one stat that's probably most telling, if you really understand Don Brown's defense, how many takeaways did Don Brown's defense actually have when he was here?
Oh, that's a good question, and not nearly enough.
And what I would tell you guys is this. It's very hard to intercept the quarterback when you're a man-to-man defense because you're not watching the quarterback. You're focusing on the receiver. Even as a safety, because you're playing with a single high safety, that guy's got a lot of ground to cover. And it's very hard to be picking off quarterbacks in those situations. Where when you're sitting in zone, I mean, again, you go back to when I played, and we were running, you know, that Pittsburgh-style zone blitzes that we would run. You would see linebackers, all of a sudden, the ball would just get thrown right into their belly.
Yeah.
Or you'd see a DB making a clear cut. Like Julius Curry won the last time we were at Ohio State.
Yeah.
Look at the interception Julius Curry has to seal the game. He is sitting in a zone, and all he did was read his second two wide receiver. He broke on the ball, and he caught that thing in stride, and no one was catching him for a clear-cut pick six. Didn't go back, watch the film. It's scary.
Yeah, I mean, I remember that play vividly. In fact, we had Julius Curry on my radio show, I don't know, a year or 2 years ago, and talked a lot about that game, and you're right. And so to answer your question, the last, not including this year, because this year the numbers are all skewed, but 2019, 18, 17, 9 interceptions, 11 interceptions, and 10 interceptions. Those ranked nationally, Michigan ranked 76th, 56th, and 67th the last 3 years in interceptions. So they didn't pick off a lot of passes, and
seemed like every time they had a chance, they dropped it. It came right into their hands and then
yeah,
right out.
I mean, I think there's probably a couple of really highly publicized drops, the Josh Metellus one in 2017 against Ohio State. Mm-hmm. And so when you have really, really big plays that could have gone the other way, you remember it a certain way and say, oh, Michigan used just drops too many interceptions. I don't think that's, when you look at the law of averages, I doubt that that's true. I doubt that Michigan dropped more interceptions than any other team. I think every team does that. I think every fan base kind of obsesses more about what their team does or does not do.
Sure.
So, but the numbers are the numbers, and they didn't pick off many passes. I mean, you know, there's certain teams that had 20 or more interceptions in 2019, and Michigan didn't have that much in 2 years. So the numbers back it up. And I think part of the problem too, and Dan, you talk about the defensive ends, but a lot of Don Brown's success early on came when he had Ryan Glasgow and Brian Monet and Matt Godine and Maurice Hurst. And whether he played a little bit of zone, but more so man-to-man, when you're creating that pressure in the middle of the defense, you're so many problems for an offense, both in trying to run the football and in trying to throw the football. And in 2019 and 2020, the last 2 years especially, you know, massive problems along the defensive tackle, just not the size, not the playmakers. And that's the major concern for Michigan going forward here, whoever they hire as a defensive coordinator is they have a couple of young guys in Chris Hinton and Mazi Smith who are both 300 pounders, but they don't have many playmakers there. And they really have very little depth there because they haven't recruited the position the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm. And I think that goes back to scheme, right? You know, how many times did we see only three defensive linemen on first and 10 for Michigan? Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's a big tell as to who they were going after in terms of recruiting. Now, don't get me wrong. I think we still have some NFL talent sitting in our backfield for defensive backs and for some linebackers. But if you're not getting pressure, unfortunately, when you have equal talent out there, those kids are going to get exposed in some way. for it, you know, plays are going to be made. It just happened. I mean, we made Chris Olave, you know, the wide receiver of Ohio State, we made him look like an All-American. And that kid is going to be an NFL talent. Don't get me wrong. But as a freshman, nobody knew his name until that game. Mm-hmm. And then it was simple routes that all of a sudden he's just making catches left and right and torching us. So,
well, before we let you go, Dan, two things. One, you know, for as much as we all express our frustration with Don Brown, I will say that, you know, from all indications, he was a class act and did
yes.
things the right way. You know, to listen to his former players talk about him, most of them loved him. We got a little bit of a brief view into the Don Brown world with the Amazon Prime video a couple years ago. And, you know, he certainly seems like the kind of guy, at least from a motivational standpoint, that you and your teammates would have absolutely loved to have played for, even if the scheme wasn't there. So I do want to say, like, I don't want to spend, you know, 30 minutes just absolutely bashing Don Brown. I do think that, you know, he did some really good things early on in his career. You know, that 2016 Ohio State game that comes down to the final, you know, the final play, the fourth and one. I mean, you know, Michigan's in that game with three turnovers offensively, three terrible turnovers offensively because
yes.
of how great that defense played.
Yes.
So he certainly did some good things at Michigan.
Without a doubt. And Don Brown is a good coach. There is no doubt about it. The thing about keeping your job, it's all about consistency. And unfortunately, the last couple of years in some big games, and especially this season, the inconsistency was too much to overcome. But in terms of football knowledge, let's be honest, Don Brown probably knows more than all of us combined on this call right now. Mm-hmm. Experience alone. He's a very good coach. He's an extremely good motivator. And what we're talking about is adjustments, guys. I mean, it's really – sometimes you just got to evolve a little bit. And if he evolves, I mean – He's easily going to be a coach somewhere next year. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. I'd love to see him. I'd love to see him be a head coach somewhere, honestly, with the way that he, you know, motivates
yes.
his guys and the whole thing. I'd love to see him get his opportunity. Maybe he's a defensive coordinator wherever he goes to, but would love to see him be a head coach. I know it's been rumored in the past before Massachusetts and other schools. And, you know, I think he's around what, 72 or a little bit older. So, give him one chance to run his own program and see what he can do with it, and certainly wish him the best. It didn't work out here at Michigan. It needed to happen because of these last few seasons and the way that they were losing games to Ohio State. But yeah, we're all in agreement. We're you know, thankful for his early time here and wish
yes.
him the best going forward.
Absolutely.
So let yes. me ask you, Dan, before we let you go here and let you I don't know if this is a full work day or not. You and I have been crossing paths in the insurance world a little bit the last few weeks. What would you do going forward here? What, you know, it doesn't have to be a name, a specific coach out there. I know the defense coordinator for Northwestern became very popular, but is supposedly retiring. So what are you looking for in a defensive coordinator? What do you want? What is that guy? If you're Jim Harbaugh, what are you kind of trying to go out there and achieve?
Well, number one, you got to find a great recruiter, a guy that can bring in the talent that you want, that you need to compete at the highest level. I mean, we're not talking, let's try to win the Big Ten. We need to win the Big Ten and we need to win a national title. So you better have an unbelievable recruiter that can bring in NFL talent at all three levels, defensive line, linebacker, defensive back. And from there, have a scheme that I think still gets after the quarterback. I don't think Don Brown's scheme is wrong, especially with the way offenses are designed today. If you are going to try to read anybody or, you know, run, you know, some type of 3-4 or 2-gap scheme, I think you're setting yourself up for failure, especially when you come into an equal talent game. So a great recruiter and a guy who has a philosophy of getting after people. And if you can find that, you're going to have success, because let's be honest, Jim Harbaugh can recruit some players, man. There's some talent that's still walking in the door at the University of Michigan. Now it's about making sure that continues and putting those guys in the best position to succeed. And if they do that, the rest will take care of itself.
All right, great stuff. Yeah, go ahead, yeah, Justin.
Just one more question here. I've asked Mike this in the past about bringing in, if it's a new head coach, coordinator, anything, you know, how long does it take to get everything set, have a new playbook or schemes and everything, get used to that? How long, you know, from a player's perspective, how long would it take, and what's the process like if a new defensive coordinator comes in? Are they, you know, hitting the books and the film right away for a long time and trying to get those schemes done before they hit the practice field and do some talent evaluation and start working on those things? And I think that just a lot of people, obviously, going into 2021, there's not much leeway and time for Jim Harbaugh and a new defensive coordinator to turn things around. So from the player's perspective and from your perspective here, how quickly can that transition and that change happen to get things to a spot where Michigan is back to a dominant defense that's providing them a chance to win every game?
I don't think it's going to take long, guys. Again, it goes back to the talent that's being recruited. I mean, look at our linebackers. I mean, we've got some NFL linebackers right now. We have some guys in the secondary who can play at the next level. Aiden Hutchinson comes back. I mean, you need to basically create opportunities for him to be in one-on-one. Like, you should be using him the way Ohio State had the Bosa brothers, as well as, you know, Chase Young. We should be putting him on the edge and letting him wreak havoc, at least from a simple schematic standpoint, right? I think it's 1 year. And I say that because you have the talent there. The kids have to adjust. And if they do, if you put the right scheme in place, you put them into to succeed and use their athletic ability, we're going to be okay. Do I think Michigan wins the Big Ten next year? No, but I tell you what, if you compete and you have a chance, one, you beat Michigan State, period, end of discussion. And two, you bring, you know, Ohio back into Columbus and you compete with those guys and you smack them in the mouth a few times the way it used to be, I think you're going to buy Jim Harbaugh and a defense coordinator another year. But if you show up and they put 55, 60 points on you, then it's time for an overhaul. That's just my personal opinion there.
All right. Great stuff from Dan Rumshek. Thanks, Dan. We'll have to have you on in the future.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate the time. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas
to
you.
Merry Christmas. Thanks, Dan.
Yep.
Two days, Justin. 2 days until Christmas. If you are, you know, so many of us out there are last-minute shoppers, and if you're looking for that gift that can still wow the person in your life, our friends at Lewis Jewelers have a wide range of options for you and lots of gifts that are under, you know, that are in a good price point, that are not, you know, thousands of dollars, but are less than $100, less than $200 that you can get some nice jewelry. As we've said repeatedly, I'm a big watch guy. So I always tell, you know, my wife, if she's looking for something for me, a new watch, I'm trying to get all the colors, trying to get all the styles so that you have a watch for every occasion. Necklaces, bracelets, earrings, and of course, diamond rings, where Justin Rowe got his diamond ring, yes, from Lewis Jewelers to propose. Just now it's like been like 10 days, right? Now it's like you're an old timer with this fiance thing.
Exactly. I've actually, you know, for the first couple times called Jacqueline my fiance, which sounds weird when you say it, but it's a nice thing to say. So yeah, now we're able to, over the next couple days, show off the ring to some family members and friends. And so very excited about all that with the sparkly bling that's on her finger now.
Well, you can learn much more by going to lewisjewelers.com. Check out their old location, their current location, I should say, on Stadium Boulevard. They're moving into their new one next year. They're very excited about that. But they do a great job keeping you safe when you're in there. They do not work on commissions, so that they're going to find the best piece of jewelry for you that fits into your price point and super, super knowledgeable. I mean, you can go in there and just say, like, you know, they're going to ask you all the right questions to make sure you walk out of there with the right gift for the person that you love. LewisJewelers.com for more information. So, Justin, you wanted to talk, before we get into some of the other coaching rumors out there, you wanted to throw something out that Orion Tsang, a reporter for the Free Press, tracked down one of Michigan's recruits to ask about Don Brown. So kind of give us the 411 on what's going on there.
Yeah, there were some reports out there, a couple different ones actually, and I think it was I can't remember who it was that put it out there that said Don Brown was, I think it was EJ Holland on the recruiting trail. He said that Don Brown, during this past month or something, leading up to signing day, Don Brown was a class act. And he said, I probably won't be here next year to the recruits, but I still think you should go to Michigan. There are plenty of opportunities. It's a great place to play, everything like that. I believe that 100%. Right. I think Don Brown, like we've said in the previous parts of this podcast, is definitely a class act. But then Orion Tsang came out and it was a quote from Junior Colson, who is a linebacker signee of this 21 class. And he said, "I was not pleased with the news about Michigan firing Don Brown. I didn't know anything about it, but I already signed, so there's nothing I can do." And he didn't know yet if he'll still early enroll or if he'll ask to be released from his letter of intent. I have to imagine, as a commit, you kind of had to see the writing on the wall here for Don Brown. I don't know, you know, how much they know or how much he was told, but to me, this means it was more on Jim Harbaugh and the whole coaching staff. They have to let everybody, every recruit and signee, know before they make this announcement. And I know Michigan didn't make the announcement. It was Bruce Feldman, but still, before it gets out, you should be contacting everybody. And so maybe Junior Colson was mistaken, who knows, but it still just kind of goes into everything we've seen over the past few weeks and few months, that they waited until after signing day to make these decisions. And so now it's kind of coming back to bite them with the communication and with everything else. So what's your take on what Junior Colson has to say?
Well, I'll start with this. I saw a lot of people on Twitter yesterday kind of like giving Junior Colson a hard time. Like, oh, come on, man. Like, you got to read the tea leaves. You got to understand this. You got to, you know, how have you not been paying attention? I'm like, look, man, I mean, he's an 18-year-old that is, looking for the rest of his career. Is it his responsibility to figure out whether his coach that he's pledging to go play for is going to be fired or not? No, that's not his responsibility. So give me a break on those hot takes. I think this is, unless we really were in the rooms with recruits, when coaches, you know, did Zoom calls with them or whatnot, this is a little bit of like, you know, Don Brown, at least from EJ Holland, is saying the right thing. Junior Colson is uncertain about it. I don't want to react too much because I think this is just kind of what happens. I think it's the gray area of college football recruiting and coaches leaving. And it happens all the time. I don't think it's right. I don't think just because it happens all the time, Michigan should do it. It's the old, if your friend jumped off a bridge, would you go jump off the bridge? No. And Michigan, you know, if they're going to, you know, say that they are a higher standard program, then they have to do things at a higher standard level. And that means if they're getting rid of Don Brown, get rid of him before signing day. Don't wait until a couple of days afterwards, then dismiss him. And you kind of just look at the, whatever it is, 7, 8, 9 defensive recruits and the staff are on in the class and be like, well, sorry, that's just the way that it goes.
Right.
You know, like that's just, It's Bush League.
It's bad business.
Ohio State did it a couple years ago with Mikey Weber, and he was super ticked, and he was talking about like trying to get out of his commitment to Ohio State, his letter of intent. He ended up going there, played there for 4 years. I mean, I think the recruits have gotten used to it to some degree, but should they get used to it, Justin? Should they be like, oh, well, my coach just left literally 3 days after I signed my letter of intent. I guess this is just the way of college football. That's a bad way of college football, if that's what we're just resigned to.
Yeah, I there's a, you can, anybody else can do whatever they want, but you're Michigan. If you want to do things the right way, you can. Michigan had every opportunity to do things the right way here, and it seems like they've slipped up, you know, pretty much every part of the way. So that's where I'm frustrated, and I think, you know, it was frustrating to see the whole thing, the whole report from Angelique Chingelis where Jim Harbaugh and Warren Manuel are finally having a conversation the day after signing day. And so when that news comes out and then you fire Don Brown just, you know, a week after signing day, it's all like, okay, this all could have happened, you know, a week ago or 2 weeks ago, and everything would have been taken care of. And so if you're trying to keep a class together or something, then I understand what the theory behind it, but it's still bad business and it's terrible to these 18-year-old kids who are, like you said, trying to make a decision about their future. So that's where I'm really frustrated with all of it. And just because it all could have been avoided, if we were sitting here and saying, well, you know, the season ran up to the last thing, which it didn't, you know, the last five games were canceled, it seemed like. So it was like there were opportunities for them to do a lot of things differently here. And they decided to put it off until it was a bad look and a bad decision there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. And so now you kind of wonder a little bit about like what other types of decisions are going to be made with the coaching staff and how will that impact recruits. And interestingly, you know, Austin Meek from The Athletic wrote an article today that lists all the other staff members, all the other coaches on Michigan's staff and what their status is. And I was not aware of this. And I wonder if you were, but most of these coaches, Mike Zordich, Sean Nua, who else? Ben McDaniels, Ed Warner, Jay Harbaugh, and Sherrone Moore, all their contracts all end on January 10th, all of them.
Really?
So,
I did not know that.
And then, so the only people that are signed beyond 2021 are Josh Gattis is signed to 2022. Brian Jean-Marie, the new linebackers coach, is signed to 2022, and Bob Shoup. Well, Bob Shoup is gone. Like, we know that for sure because, I mean, he's been AWOL this entire year. Michigan kind of had, like, a bland release about it.
Right.
According to Nick Baumgartner, who also writes from The Athletic, they have been FOIAing Freedom of Information Act on Bob Shoup for many months now, and they're not getting anywhere with Michigan. They're citing privacy issues as why they can't. So he's gone. But all those other guys, their contracts are going to expire in whatever that is, 18 days. So I don't know that, you know, we're going to see something like a firing. We're going to see a dismissal as much as I bet you in the next 18 days or right around January 10th, there's going to be three or four of these guys that just don't get renewed a contract.
Right.
And one of the rumors out there from Chris Ballas of thewolverine.com is that Ben McDaniels is definitely going to be out, that Jim Harbaugh is going to take over as the quarterback's coach, which if you look at the history since he's been at Michigan, he really hasn't been exclusively the quarterback's coach. You've had Jed Fish, you've had Ben McDaniels, you had Pep Hamilton was the quarterback's coach. So Jim Harbaugh's never been the quarterback's coach. So maybe he's kind of saying like, hey, if I'm going down with this sinking ship, then I'm going to be the captain and I'm going to be the guy who is in charge of quarterbacks. And then the other thing that Chris Ballas posted is that Jay Harbaugh, his son, is supposed to move from running backs just to special teams, which would allow them an opportunity to bring in a running backs coach. Mike Hart, anybody? I mean, that's the one that seems to be really popular. But I would not be surprised if on January 10th, these contracts just expire for a lot of these guys, including Sean Nua, Ben McDaniels. You got to bring Ed Warner back. He's been the one of the best coaches that they've had. You probably bring back Sherrone Moore, but certainly there's other moving parts coming for this Michigan coaching staff.
Yeah, I think the Ben McDaniels thing has got to be the most obvious, right? He had pocket aces essentially in August here, and still somehow screwed it up with McCaffrey, Milton, Cade McNamara. Like you had so many chances for Ben McDaniels to develop quarterbacks, especially in the past 4 years, let alone just this year, and it didn't work out. So it'll be interesting to see Jim Harbaugh how he handles that. If he's, you know, super, you know, into it, or if he kind of lets, you know, Gattis take over some of the responsibilities there, or it'll be interesting to just see how they work together. I see that. I would love to see Ed Warner get some more responsibilities too in the run game. So maybe, you know, not that he's the running backs coach, but he has some more play calling responsibilities or schemes responsibilities between the offensive line and the running backs. Mike Hart, absolutely. Bring him in. He's done a phenomenal job at Indiana. They have had multiple running backs go to the NFL, and they've had a dynamic offense, whether it was the passing game or the running game. On defense, I think that they're probably, like you said, going to let a lot of those contracts expire and let whoever the new defensive coordinator is bring some guys of his own in. So if it's Derek Mason or Will Muschamp or whoever else, they probably have a lot of guys that they're going to bring in from their own staffs that they had at Vanderbilt or South Carolina or wherever else. And then Jim Harbaugh, I'm sure, has a couple people in mind for to fill in the gaps as well. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next, like you said, week from now, 2 weeks or whatever it is. I think it's interesting with the holidays because people aren't in the office. People are with their families. So you can't make a ton of decisions until probably after January 1st, at least. I don't know what's going on with the hiring part of, is Derek Mason taking a visit here? Is Will Muschamp taking a visit here? Is Jim Harbaugh flying to them? Who knows? So I think there will be a lot going on over the next couple weeks or 3 weeks here in terms of the coaching staffs.
All right. Well, we will have much more in our Saturday podcast. We'll also talk about the Michigan basketball game. They play on Christmas Day. And so we're looking forward to that. Although, I don't know about you, Justin, but I think I'm going to end up having to watch that game probably Saturday morning because I'm not going to really jump out of family gathering family dinner to go watch Michigan basketball play. But we'll get around to it. We will talk about that, talk about anything else that comes up from football. Look ahead to some of the bowl games that supposedly are going to get played just talk it through like we always do. Enjoying this podcast and enjoy the first couple of months. I wish everybody a Merry Christmas. Thank you to our awesome sponsors, Kapnick Insurance Group, Frankenmuth Insurance, our good friends at Wolverine State Brewing Company, Lewis Jewelers, and Weber's Hotel and Restaurant. And Justin, thanks for, I guess this isn't, we shouldn't do like end of the year because we've got a couple more to go. We'll do some end of the year stuff next week and look back at 2020. What a year. And thank God we're moving on, right? we're just going to give like giant middle fingers to 2020 next week.
For sure. Yeah. But for now, we'll enjoy the Christmas season and the holiday season. So Merry Christmas to everyone out there. Enjoy your families. Enjoy, maybe some peace and quiet for a change here if you're doing Christmas, by yourselves and not doing the large gathering thing. So enjoy it no matter what you're doing.
This is the Stadium in Maine podcast. Presented by Kapnick Insurance Group, Wolverine State Brewing Company, and Lewis Jewelers.